Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, turning our attention now to organ transplants and organ donation. And I'm really happy to have Dr. Tony D'Alessandro, our guest. He heads the Division of Transplant Surgery at the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics, a premier place. And here's a premier guy, and he's also a professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. With us today to talk with you and with me about organs, transplants, what organs we can transplant, what kinds of conditions make them necessary, and sort of the ins and outs of them. As I understand it, Wisconsin, we do pretty well compared to other states in terms of the number of people who are willing to be listed as organ donors, and so that's kind of a good thing, although I think there's probably still plenty of room for improvement in that area. You can join in. I hope you will. If you have questions, maybe you've received an organ transplant. A good friend of mine received a heart and did pretty well for a long time with it. Are you registered to be a donor? Why or why not? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And certainly we'd love to hear from you. And Dr. Tony D'Alessandro, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
What organs are able to be transplanted?
There are 8 organs that can be transplanted. They're solid organs, and mm-hmm. many people are aware of those organs, and they are the heart, the lung, the liver, the kidneys, the pancreas, and the intestines, actually. And sometimes with the liver, for example, we can actually split or divide that liver for 2 potential recipients mm-hmm. as well. So in addition to the solid organ transplants, many people are benefited through tissue donation, where up to 50 people can benefit from tissue or corneal donation as well.
So we can really do a lot with
absolutely
with someone's body, and we are fairly good at it here. I mean, Wisconsin citizens pretty good about.
We are in a very good location for organ donations. People in our state are very, very generous. Wanting to leave a living legacy of their loved one behind when they're in such tragic circumstances. However, despite that, there are patients who don't survive in our state, friends, neighbors, who mm-hmm. don't get that chance at a new life because an organ did not become available in time for them.
How is it determined the types of conditions that make them, you know, kind of necessary?
There are a variety of conditions depending on the organ type. For example, there are a number of kidney diseases. Kidneys are the most common transplant that we perform. There are a number of diseases that affect the kidneys, chronic changes in the kidneys that require transplantation. And kidney transplantation certainly is a much better option than dialysis long term. Patients' lives are extended, and they do much better with kidney transplant. Liver transplantation, for example, one of the leading or increasing causes is what we call non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, or NASH, which is basically a fatty liver, which can cause liver disease and cirrhosis. Mm-hmm. Alcohol, of course, mm-hmm. is a leading cause of liver disease, as well as a number of other diseases. So once a liver progresses to cirrhosis and some of the findings, then those patients are evaluated and undergo transplantation if they meet all the requirements and there are no other existing issues that we have to deal with.
The transplant surgery team at the UW hospitals and clinics is pretty good group of people there. Really good group.
We do have a great group. We have in our division, we have 8 abdominal transplant surgeons, and I believe in the cardiothoracic, another 5 transplant surgeons. And it's kind of one of those secrets in your own backyard you don't know mm-hmm. about. Our program is one of the top programs, not only in the volume, we're always in the top 10 across the country. And when you consider the population of our state,
yeah.
that's a huge program. And but we're equally proud of the outcomes and the long-term results of those patients who become transplant candidates.
Yeah. Well, lots of people want to visit with you, so I'm going to turn to Bruce in Oshkosh first. Bruce, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yes, I have two notes for you. One was that in 1981, I gave my sister my left kidney, and that had been predicted by Ma Bell in 1963 when I moved to Wisconsin. She gave me the phone number 233-0681. If you take 2 times 3 times 3, that's 18. And on the 18th of 06, that's June, in 1981, I gave my sister a kidney. Now, I don't know how Ma Bell knew that, but I can say this. It made my sister so much brighter that she went from instructor of physics, and before she retired last year, she was vice chancellor of the UW-Madison. And the only problem with that, now she's retired, she lives up in Aspen near the Physics Institute, and if she ever gets pissed off at me, it's my own urine.
Well, there's a positive story.
Absolutely. That's a testament to the longevity of transplants and that people lived normal, productive lives after transplantation.
And obviously, that was the case with Bruce's sister. Thanks, Bruce, for calling. Appreciate it. Scott in La Crosse, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi there, Larry. I had quite a surprise a couple weeks ago. I was at a holiday fair. And there was a booth there, and it said, big sign, are you a donor? And so I went up and started talking to him, and the woman said, are you a donor? And I said, sure. She said, show me your license. So I got my license out of my wallet, showed her, and I have my little orange dot on the front. She said, flip your license over. I did, and I had not signed and dated it. And she said, you're not a donor. If you died right now, there would be nothing they could do. You have to actually have that signed and dated. So she had a little Sharpie there, and I did so. And I asked her, I said, well, why on earth? I just got my license last February. I said, why on earth why would you be able to walk out of the DMV with an orange sticker thinking you're a donor and yet not be official because you hadn't signed it? She said, I don't know, but we're trying to educate everybody in the state. So I'm trying to educate everybody in the state. I've been asking everybody I know, you think you're a donor? Flip over your license.
Take a look.
That's a great point that you make. The orange donor sticker tells us of your intent, but unless you sign your license, it's not a legal document. An important thing now is the donor registry in Wisconsin at yesiwillwisconsin.com. It's an online registry because when you go to the Department of Motor Vehicles, you get your license, but it's only every 8 years. So it's very important that if you haven't signed your license or you hadn't thought about it, that you could go online. And in fact, the registry here in Wisconsin was one of the fastest growing registries in the country with over a million people registered to date.
Wow, that's great.
And in fact, that they are the people that had the booth. Now that you mention it, that was her name. So mm-hmm. That's good to know, too. Let's try and get everybody we can who doesn't donate to get to that site. I think it's really important.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling, Scott. Appreciate it. Let's go to Jenna in Milwaukee. I have some questions for you, too, but Jenna's got one, so let's go to her first. Hi, Jenna.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. How you
sure.
doing?
Sure, great.
I was diagnosed with cancer in the year 2000 and went through chemo, radiation, surgery, et cetera. Have not had a recurrence, but when I was completing my treatment, my oncologist, I had asked about both blood and organ donation in the future, and my oncologist, I think, half-jokingly said, yeah, nobody wants your blood or organs after what you've been through. But I just wanted to check and see if cancer survivors can opt to donate organs.
Usually you can, and I'm not an eye person, but sometimes corneas can be donated in the setting of previous history of cancer. And sometimes there are some bone and tissues, but usually not with solid organs. It does depend on the type of cancer, but I would not say that you are unequivocally a non-donor, but that perhaps you could donate, especially cornea.
Hmm.
Is there a way to note that somewhere on, you know, on the driver's license? Or I'm just thinking in a scenario, if something happened to me, how could a health professional get that information?
When you're in a situation where you may be in a tragic circumstance, there is a long evaluation and process that the organ recovery organization goes through in very detailed manner and determines, based on all of your medical history in quite a bit of detail, whether or not tissue, eye, or organs can be donated. So that will be done, I can assure you of that.
Mm.
Super. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I had a tumor in my finger, and the tumor was removed, and there was some bone marrow from someone donated from a cadaver that was inserted into my finger. So I'm somebody who has actually benefited from mm-hmm. A transplant of a sort, I guess.
Yes, yes. And tissue and bone are used very frequently. They may not be life-saving, but certainly yeah. life-enhancing for those patients who need tendons, who need bone, for fusions, for knee repairs, and all kinds of other uses that tissue comes in handy for.
Absolutely. We have, how many people are waiting for organ transplants?
In the United States, about 115,000 people, and in Wisconsin, about 2,000 people. And unfortunately, about 19 people die every day in the U.S. For lack of a transplant, and 11 patients are added every few minutes in the U.S.
Oh, boy. And we're able to perform how many in a year, or how many are performed?
In the United States, there's about there's a combination of live donor transplants and deceased donor transplants. Mm-hmm. So all together, about 25,000 or 26,000 transplants. But as you see, that's clearly not enough if you have 115,000 waiting. Live donations make up about a third of our program right now. So you can donate a kidney to a loved one, part of your liver to a loved one as well. And that helps make up for the deceased donors that we don't have.
Dr. Tony D'Alessandro, our guest with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. Well, whether you have considered becoming a live donor or if you've had to make a heartbreaking choice after a tragic accident, it's a huge decision to donate an organ, but it can literally be the difference between the end of someone's life or a new beginning. Hi, Larry Mueller here. So glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. Dr. Tony D'Alessandro, our guest today, heads the Division of Transplant Surgery at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. Great information about what conditions can be treated with an organ donation, what exciting new developments are happening, and of course, he's happy to answer your questions when you call in. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Leave a comment or a question on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And I hope you'll like the page while you're there. We'll send you updates on upcoming show topics. Love to hear from you. News is next. Taking a look at organ transplants and donations today. We know that our bodies work hard every day to keep us alive and well. And maybe you've thought about giving part of your body to someone else to share that gift of life. Larry Mueller here. Dr. Tony D'Alessandro heads the Division of Transplant Surgery at the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics, professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and is our guest today, here to demystify what organ donation means a lot to a lot of people. And I tell you what, it's something I feel comfortable doing. I hope it's something that you will feel comfortable considering as well. And Dr. D'Alessandro, thank you again for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
We had a Facebook comment from Gwen who said, I have a cousin who received a heart, which replaced her very weak and damaged heart. She was only in her 40s, still alive today and a blessing to our family and friends. Some people feel they will get compromised care if the hospital knows they are an organ donor, and knowing what Jill needed and received is enough reason for me to always sign the back of my driver's license.
I'm glad you brought up demystifying some ideas that people have, and clearly everything is done for a patient when they arrive either on the scene or into an emergency room. And it's only after all the efforts to resuscitate that person fails does the topic of donation come up. And so I think everyone should rest assured that everything mm-hmm. will be done for them. And when it can't be, there's still another opportunity for that person to help quite a number of people in need.
Someone wanted you to explain the language on the back of the driver's license a little bit more. What exactly does it mean if you do or do not agree to make an anatomical gift?
All the organs and tissues and eyes are known as anatomical gifts. Mm-hmm. And so when you sign the back of your license, you sign for the anatomical gifts. On the website, on yesiwillwisconsin.com, you also, when you sign on the website, you agree to organ, eye, and tissue donation. You can also, at some point in the future, if you decide to opt out, you can do that as well. But I think most people realize that if they're in that situation and they're very giving people, that they would like to leave a legacy behind so that they can help others in need. And one of the things that you mentioned, or this last person mentioned, was how their lives were affected by their loved one getting a heart transplant. So it's not just the recipient who benefits. Their entire family and everyone that's in their lives benefits as well.
Lyric in Blanchardville, thank you so much for calling. Hello.
Hi. My son-in-law, my daughter's husband, they fly him out in Colorado. They live between Boulder and Denver, and he helps to harvest those organs and tissues, and it's a very, in quite a few ways, stressful, even though he knows it's a very important job. So I just wanted to give a heartfelt thanks out to all those folks that do those jobs that we don't think about.
Yeah.
Yes, that, though, you know, spending time with donor families is something that we do, and it's very important to spend the time with them and to understand the magnitude of the gift and their selflessness in those settings and in those tragic circumstances. The people who go out and recover those organs and tissues deal with that every day. And so we do have to care for them as well, because it can be stressful.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Lyric. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
And thanks.
Good program.
And thanks to your relative for doing that. Appreciate
it. Okay, bye-bye.
Tom in Fond du Lac. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I'm wondering, is there an age limit to becoming a donor?
There is no absolute age limit. Currently, we do go up to age 75, but we will individually look at the patient's history, and you can be a 75-year-old with a pristine medical history. As we do get older, there are some conditions that we have that may preclude donation, but we look at every person individually and whether or not, whether it's the liver or the kidneys or any other organ can be donated. We'll look at all those on an individual basis.
Hmm. Thanks, Tom. And Tracy in Middleton, hello to you.
Hi, Larry, Dr. D'Alessandro. About 20 years ago, a colleague of mine, a coworker, had a kidney ailment and required a kidney transplant. Unfortunately, she did not receive one in time and died. I wanted to be tested as a possible donor, but live donor, obviously, mm-hmm. but had epilepsy, and my neurologist told me that the anticonvulsants I was taking were too taxing on my kidneys and liver, and I would not be able to tolerate the anticonvulsants with just one kidney. And I know that anticonvulsants, the drugs that treat epilepsy, have changed an awful lot over the decades. I wondered if drugs to treat seizures and other conditions, whether for the heart or whether for high blood pressure, what have you, whether those have changed in recent years enough so that they're less taxing on the kidneys and liver and make more live donation organ donations possible.
You bring up a good point. We certainly would consult with our neurology colleagues, but you're correct. Medications have changed, and it's difficult to keep up with those. But we have had patients on those medications, the newer ones, and they have come to donation. And so I think it really depends on each setting individually, and we would evaluate anyone who was interested. One thing that perhaps you're bringing up, just to be clear, is that we do humanitarian donation. If someone wants to donate a kidney, we receive several offers every year from people who are really that giving to donate to anyone in need. And so we would evaluate those people. So I'm not sure that's what you were suggesting, but that is something that we do consider as humanitarian donation.
Hmm. And we have a national kidney registry now. That's something new, isn't it?
That's correct. As I mentioned earlier, about a third of the transplants we do are live donors, but there are people who want to donate who can't to their loved one because of their blood type or because of antibodies they may have to each other. And in the last couple of years, we've been involved with a national exchange program where that person can now donate into the national pool and another kidney from elsewhere in the country comes back to the person that they wanted to donate. So they still help the loved one they wanted to donate to. This happens, you know, across the country now.
It's great. Tim in Cornell, Wisconsin. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hello. Thank you. I would just like to say that I am on the organ donor list and that I also received an organ. I had a heart transplant at University of Wisconsin Medical Complex, and I am going on my eighth year, and I will be there on December 13th for my checkup.
Wow.
Glad to see that you're doing so well. And even though you've had a heart transplant yourself, if you were ever in a situation that you passed away, we still could potentially consider donation in your setting as well. And that's happened in the past. And so I'm glad that you're also on the registry.
Thanks, Tim.
Yes, thank you. This program is great.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. 8 years. That's wonderful. Tony in Mount Horeb. Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Dr. D'Alessandro, could knows anything about Dr. Murray, who out in Boston, who did the first kidney transplant, apparently with an item on the radio this morning. I believe it was 50 years ago. And if Dr. Murray had any connection to Dr. D'Alessandro's mentor, Dr. Belzer at UW.
I think the first kidney by Dr. Murray was in 1954. What most people don't realize is he became a plastic surgeon after that, and but he did get the Nobel Prize because of his initial transplantation. That's helped so many people since that initial transplant. Dr. Belzer, who was my mentor, did not train with Dr. Murray, but they knew each other well through the years. Dr. Murray was in Boston, and Dr. Belzer in Connecticut and in Oregon, and then here at UW for many years.
Ah, there we go. Thanks, Tony, for calling. And Jody in New Glarus. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to talk about organ donation from the other side, and that is that my mother died a year ago, and very unexpectedly, and she was on the organ donor list, although she had some pretty significant chronic health issues. We were still able to donate skin and her eyes. And at her funeral, she received a little medal and then the plastic wristbands that signified that she was an organ donor. And it gave us tremendous peace to know that she was still helping even after she had passed.
I think that's wonderful to recognize our donors as your mother was recognized.
Oh, thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very, very much. It must have helped the family. Mary in Dodgeville, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I also had a question regarding skin donation. About 30 years ago, my mother was burned, and there was not enough skin, human skin donation available, and she had to use animal skin, actually, during the recovery process. And one thing she always raised us to do was make sure we donated our skin if that was ever an issue. But there's been so many changes in skin grafting and burn treatment, I wonder if that's still really necessary.
There are a lot of changes and factors, synthetic, if you will, skin that's being developed, but we still need skin from donors for burn victims, and I would still encourage donation in that setting for those patients in need. And as you heard or said, you had to use animal skin, and that's a temporary fix. But
sure.
Live human skin would be better.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. And Douglas in Edgerton. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I had a couple of questions. One is, what are some of the associated costs with transplanting an organ? And then number two, if someone does not have insurance, does this preclude them from receiving an organ?
Because transplantation is now standard treatment for end-stage organ disease, insurance covers... and all forms of insurance cover transplantation. It is extremely rare that we ever run into a situation where there isn't insurance coverage, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, private insurers. If not all, insurances cover transplantation and the medications that are required to be taken afterwards.
Mm. And speaking about those medications afterwards, a listener, Eric, would like to know more about how the recipient is treated with anti-rejection drugs after a transplant. Does it matter what type of organ is being transplanted?
The anti-rejection medications have improved substantially over the last number of years, where they're more targeted, more specific toward the immune process, and have far fewer complications and side effects. And so... depending on the organ, we may vary the dosage or amount, but essentially the medications are the same for the maintenance. And if there is a rejection episode, we can more easily treat those nowadays with the medications we have. We don't lose as many transplants as we did, say, 10 or 15 years ago from rejection.
Facebook question from Tatiana, who says, I understand that if you are a donor, your parts may be used for scientific research and study rather than going to a person who needs your organs. Is this true? I don't want to be a cadaver in a lab. Is there a way to donate with a stipulation that parts are only used for human transplant?
The organs are always used for transplant first. And so if the organ, whether it's your heart, lungs, kidney, pancreas, liver, are always looked at for transplantation first. If they can't be used for whatever reason, there was trauma to them, or say you had kidney disease but your liver was good, then in those situations research consent is obtained, and so that we can help people down the road through science and research. And so we only do the research if we can't use organs for transplant.
Joe in Washburn, thanks for calling, Joe. Appreciate it.
Yes, I just wanted to bring up an aspect. A friend of mine, his name was Jim, and about 6 years prior to his death, he suffered a pretty bad heart situation, but then, you know, came back to work and really did a great job as a teacher, teaching physics and mathematics and statistics. And 6 years after that, event, he suffered a brain bleed. But during that 6-year period, we had a lot of time to talk to each other about about being a donor. And he was very specific that that's what he wanted to be because he's the science guy. And, you know, when he had the severe brain bleed, we were told he was not going to survive. And he was placed on a ventilator. And one thing that we were told was that, and came to pass, that you know, if he would have been taken off the ventilator, he would have probably passed away within 2 hours to 2 days. But because he was on the ventilator, he may survive for another 2 weeks, and they need to keep him on the ventilator as a donor. It ended up that he passed away about 5 or 6 days later. Let me tell you, being a close friend of somebody like Jim, it's hard to go into a hospital and pray that your friend would finally die so that his wish of being a donor could be granted. But I can tell you, I was there when the surgeons took the organs from his body. I was the last guy to leave that room, and I told them, you take everything that you can from this guy to use to help other people because that is what he wanted.
That's a great anecdote. I think honoring the wishes of the person is really important, and we do everything we can to make donation happen. And it's obvious in this case you went the extra mile for your friend.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Joe, for calling and sharing that your story with us. Appreciate it very much. Carol in Wisconsin Rapids says, many thanks to the gentleman who called regarding the need to sign our driver's license. I pulled mine out, and sure enough, I hadn't signed it, so I signed it immediately. Also regarding kidney transplant, does one usually have to undergo dialysis for a while before receiving a donor kidney, or is it possible to skip the dialysis step?
We do transplant patients before they go on dialysis. In fact, they do better. The way those patients get transplanted before they actually go on dialysis is if they have a live donor. Usually, if you don't have a live donor, you don't have to go on dialysis, but that is usually the natural course that you end up on dialysis for a while. And so most patients are on dialysis because they do have to wait a while. Although in Wisconsin, we have some of the lowest waiting times for kidney transplants or any other organ transplant in the state. So I think that's interesting and important to know.
You mentioned that, this is more on the insurance, you mentioned that most insurance covers transplants, but what if somebody has no insurance at all? Will they be able to get an organ transplant if they need one?
That is a challenging question. There are some people who have no insurance at all, and those are discussed individually. But most of the time, if they have no insurance whatsoever, then it's such an expensive proposition to do that we do, in those instances, many times say no.
Yeah. It can't be helped at sometimes. Tony in Sparta, hello. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I just have a quick question, and I apologize if you covered this already. My question is, me, for example, I would love to be an organ donor, but I, due to blood transfusions, I've been told that I can't because of antibiotics I have in my blood now. I'm just curious, and is it still possible, or what can I do to become an organ donor, or I'm just not for sure what options I might have.
I'm not being familiar with your condition. I can't envision a process where there are antibodies in your system that would preclude you from donating. And if you had normal organ function, then you still should be able to be considered for organ donation. Obviously, I'd need to know the specifics of what the antibodies are and what condition you have, but I would not completely rule yourself out at this point.
Oh, perfect.
Good. Thank you very much for calling. And what happens to the body after, you know, let's say someone's, all of their organs that can be donated are donated? What happens to the rest of the body?
Organ and tissue donation is completely compatible with an open casket, open viewing. There is no disfiguration of the body in such a way that you couldn't have that. So That is another one of the myths that we have to clarify from time to time, is that organ and tissue donation do not disfigure or make an open viewing not possible.
And so our charge today is to take a look at your driver's license, and if you haven't signed the back of it, please sign the back of it, or go online.
Yeah, yesiwillwisconsin.com, because many times if you sign your license, it may not be with you at the time of a tragic accident, and so it would be much better to go to the registry. Both are important. Talking to your family is important, but signing up on the registry is really important.
I'll do that right after the show. I've got it on my license, but I haven't done the sign-up, but I will do it. Thank you so much. Dr. Tony D'Alessandro, our guest, we'll have him back. Thank you for listening. Stay with us.